This is the Mobile Tech Podcast, brought to you by worldpodcasts.com. Now here's your host, Tech Girl Miriam Joie.
Brought to you by Audible. Stay tuned for a special offer at the end of the show. Hi, and welcome to the Mobile Tech Podcast. I'm your host, Miriam Joar, and today is Friday, July 22nd, 2022, and my guest is the excellent Anshel Sag. Hi, Anshel, how are you?
Doing good. How about yourself?
I'm great. It's been a busy week on phone launches. We covered the Nothing Phone 1 last week in terms of, you know, the official announcement. But now the reviews are out. And then, of course, the Google Pixel 6a is out as well. I don't have either. They're coming. I guess I'm still second tier. But you know what? I want to talk with you. First of all, do you have the phones?
No, I don't have either. But I do have a different phone that's also embargoed, which is in a box just out of frame. It's a different tier of device, but it's a Snapdragon 8 Plus Gen 1.
It's funny because I think I have the exact same phone off frame as well. But that's for another week, folks. Today we're going to talk about Pixel 6a and about Phone 1. But we're going to kind of get more into like meta review, right? What the reviews out there are saying, what our opinions are. You already know kind of how I feel about Nothing from last week if you listen, folks. But let's start with Pixel 6a because I feel like that's the freshest, the newest. What's your take on that phone?
I think if you look at a lot of the reviews, it's kind of what everybody expected it would be.
Yeah.
You know, the price point is correct. I think it could be a little lower, but, you know, they could always be a little lower. I think in terms of where it fits into the phone segment, I think it does well. I think its primary competitor is the A53 from Samsung. And it seems like it does a lot better than that phone does.
Well, it really depends, I think, what your priorities are. I mean, first of all, that's a US view, right? For sure.
Right.
But I think that if you're looking for a big display that's 120 hertz and that's your priority, I think the Samsung's a better fit. But if you're looking for the camera and a smaller phone and you want all the googly goodness, right? Then I think the Pixel 6a is a better fit. And I kind of feel like US consumers are going to be kind of torn. Some of them are going to go for the Samsung just because it's the Samsung, you know?
I also think that Google's marketing will also be a factor, right? Because they've marketed the Pixel line pretty heavily, but it's always been the top of the line. They've never really spent much marketing and ad spend on the mid-range.
True. Because they've always kind of been on autopilot for the A series, I think, you know? Because the first one they did, like, nobody knew what to expect. They kind of blew us away, right? And then, like, from then on, people are like, oh, well, I guess it's a Pixel A of some kind, it's going to be good. Because after that, they kind of blew us away again with the 4A. Remember the 4G one? And then they came out with the 4A 5G, which was just as good in a different way. And then just as we didn't think it could get better, they came out with the 5A, which is just a minor incremental improvement over the 4A 5G. But it's more affordable and water resistant and added a bunch of features. Like, it was such a stealth under the radar kind of phone. Like, when it was announced, I shrugged, and then I got my review unit and I reviewed it for Hot Hardware. And I was like, oh my God, this is such a delight to use. Like, it's a boring looking phone. It spec wise is like very mid rangey, but man, it's good. And I think the 6A's changed things a bit. I think that there's more competition. As you said, Samsung's really upped their game on the A series over the years. And I think abroad, there's a ton more competition, Nothing and the Nord 2, Realme, Redmi, Poco with the F4. So I think if you look at the big picture, you know, it's a tough place to be now compared to a year ago. And I think with the previous, the 5A was only sold in US and Japan anyway. So it didn't matter in Europe. But now I think this is being sold in Europe. So that means that basically people are going to experience Pixel for maybe the first time in some of these markets. And, you know, it's going to be an option they're going to have to consider. Will they consider it? Like, in the US, I think it's very likely people would buy this phone. Like, I could see that happening. But I think in Europe, it might be a little tougher, and certainly in other markets.
What I was also going to say is this kind of extends Google's investment on Tensor. in the sense that it amortizes their development costs across more devices. And arguably, this device will probably sell in considerably higher volume than the regular Pixels do, because that's kind of been the A series shtick as of late. And I think that if you look at what they're trying to do, they have to be able to justify the investment of building their own chips, even though this is kind of like a semi-custom Samsung chip. I think the performance profile of it is considerably higher than most of the other chips in this price point.
Oh, yeah. They're definitely winning the performance bang for your buck here, right?
Yeah. And I think they may be potentially, I don't know what the clock speeds are. I haven't read any reviews that actually check performance against the Pixel 6 in terms of actual numbers. But I have a feeling that these might be slightly slower bend chips because this is a less expensive device and they can afford to maybe run it a couple hundred megahertz lower and get better yields.
You know, you should check out Hot Hardware's review. Since I used to write for them, I actually went and checked that. They did the benchmarks. And since I did the previous benchmarks on the previous Pixels for them, I noticed it's a little bit slower. So you're right. I think they're binning them or they're running it underclocked a little bit, because battery life is killer on this phone from everything I've read, which surprises me because battery life on my 6 Pro is okay, but not fantastic. And it's kind of decreased a bit in the last few updates. And I think that's just, you know, some software teething problems like Google always has. Like, Pixels just don't age gracefully, right? And I don't want to do a factory reset. I'm too lazy for that. It's my main phone. So I think that's my issue with Tensor, is that I think on this phone, it's perfect because it's like giving you all that bang for your buck. You're kind of like, they basically prioritize the processor over the display this time. Whereas if you look at the previous A's, they were more balanced in that sense. The display was more in line with the processor. But here you're getting a killer processor and then you're getting a 60 hertz display. Wah, wah, wah. So it's really what you want to do. Now, with the A series, you get a kind of crappy processor, frankly. And then you get, you know, I mean, comparatively. And then you get like a better display. Samsung's going to make a better display every time. It's OLED, it's 120 hertz. You can't go wrong. Now, but if you want cameras, it's always going to be Pixel for me. I'm sorry, right? Samsung's going to be solid, but what would you say?
I think on the mid-range, yeah, for sure. I at the high-end, Pixels are a little bit, it depends on the use case. But the one thing I was concerned about was thermals, because this is a smaller body. Using the same SoC, which means there's less space to dissipate heat.
But it is aluminum frame, so
maybe it dissipates heat better than a glass body. But that's probably my only concern, is just like, how does it handle video recording? Because I had issues recording video on
The 5A, yeah. I remember that. That was the only major flaw. I felt like, to me, it was a software flaw. Like, it seemed like that chip, the 765G, should have been able to record 4K 30, no problem all day long. And I don't know, there's something with their thermals or their implementation that was causing some problems there. Do you feel that this phone lacks in terms of its camera specs? Because, I mean, personally, I don't. Like, I feel like it's got the ultra wide from the 6 and 6 Pro, the 12 megapixel, the newer one, but it has the old sensor from all the previous Pixels with OIS 12 megapixel. You know, like, what is that, Sony IMX 363 or something? Like, it's some, like, started with a Pixel 3 or Pixel 2, right? And I think that's a solid sensor in the sense that it's well-tuned with their algorithms. So why not, you know, cut some costs there, right? See, I think this is the compromises they made. They're really interesting. Like, I don't think it's a glass back. I haven't been able to confirm. I think it's plastic, but at the same time, it's a metal frame, which you don't see at this price point, commonly. Anymore. It used to be more common, but they've kind of tuned down the main camera but gone for tested and true. Then the processor is bonkers good, and then the display is okay, and there's no wireless charging, right? And so that is a bit of a bummer, because, well, they didn't have it before, but I feel like, wouldn't it be nice, since these three phones kind of look the same, you know, 6A, 6 and 6 Pro, if they all had wireless charging? But at the same time, they removed the headphone jack. So for those people in the A series, that was one of the big aces of the A series. You always got the headphone jack. So I don't know. I think it's a solid choice of specs, and it's just a different approach which differentiates enough from the competition that it might make it compelling for some people. But it's definitely not the more well-rounded, well-balanced, kind of all the way around mid-ranger that it was in the previous versions. There's kind of more of a peaks and valley in the spec sheet. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think the peak in the SoC, if you ask me, has more to do with the fact that it's they're focused on AI performance, and all the Google Pixel experiences are going to be dependent on that processor's performance. So they're really thinking about like all of the language stuff, you know, being able to enable that real-time voice to text, all the AI image features. I think they are trying to compromise less on the processor purely because they don't want that experience on the software side to really degrade much.
Yeah, you're not going to get that processing that you were getting on the previous A phones. They would still eventually get you your lovely googly photo out of there, but it would take a little while. Whereas now,
and I had to watch it, yeah,
instantly, right? Like I assume it is because I don't have the phone. But look, the reality is this: I don't think you can go wrong at $449 on this. Like I just don't think you can go wrong if you are in North America. And you can live with a 60 hertz display and you want a mid-range phone and you can live without wireless charging. Those would be the two things for me that are like, because of what I'm used to in my day-to-day with my flagships. I would totally go there. I think if I had like, you know, buy my own phones and be on a more of a budget, it would be a toss between this and the Nothing Phone 1 for me. But the Nothing Phone 1 wouldn't work in the US properly. So then it would be this. Like, I don't see myself getting A53. That's not happening. Like, I like Samsung, but I'd rather wait for a sale on a S21 FE or something, you know?
I was just Googling to see the price of that.
Oh, yeah, go for it. So what is it?
So actually, you can get an S21 for $449 right now.
Oh, my God. Well, that. Oof.
And it's a 128 gig as well.
Yeah, so that's the other thing. There's only one storage option. 128 gigs. You get 6 gigs of RAM, which I think is fine.
You can get it for $449 right now from Samsung.
Wow. Samsung makes it hard. Like, I definitely wouldn't buy an A53 if I was set on buying a Samsung phone in this price point, I'd 100% get an S21.
So you want to hear a funny story? A friend of mine recently was looking for a new phone when the A53 came out. And I was recommending it to him because I was like, this is probably in your budget, like the best deal. Cause when it came out, it was a great choice, but they were completely out of stock. If you remember when they first launched.
Oh yeah. As usual with supply issues right now, that's everybody.
So he ended up actually getting like an S21 cause it was just on sale at that time. And I was like, dude, S21 versus A53 is kind of a no brainer.
Right. It's like, yeah, you can't go wrong here. This is, I would pick the S21 in a heartbeat. Sorry. You know, like, come on, it's 888, right? Like,
it's a flagship. That's still
so solid.
A last year flagship is still better than like a, you know, a slightly upper mid tier.
I kind of feel that if you have a phone right now with an 865 still, you're good. Like, I tell you why, because the 865 plus, AKA the 870 exists and is still being obviously actively sold. And there's some great phones out there with it, including the Poco F4, which are just like, you ask yourself, why do I need more than an 870 when you use that phone? Like you play games on it and you're like, I've got like the Redmagic 7S Pro in my pocket right now. Snapdragon 8 Plus Gen 1. Yeah. And honestly, I'm like, do I need that? Because I play games. I mean, of course you got, you know, the fan and you've got the trigger buttons. But if I'm playing the same games on the F4, which I have as well, it's like, yeah, honestly, the battery life's better on the F4. The thermals are better, and I don't see any difference in performance. Now, I'm talking about like some of the more hardcore games. So the question is, do we really need anything more than an 870 right now? Which is essentially a 3-year-old architecture now?
Yeah.
Wow. Like, think about this, guys. If you have a OnePlus 8 Pro right now, as long as the software is updated, which is probably getting a bit long in the tooth now because you know, Oppo, BBK Group, OnePlus doesn't quite have the best track record anymore. But that phone, performance-wise, is going to be perfectly good enough today. So the question is, if you're presented with an S21, with an 888 in there, you can get a deal on it right now. I say 100% all the way. Yeah.
I think the only significant difference is actually AI performance. So if you're doing any kind of AI, if you have any software that utilizes AI acceleration and uses an API, every generation, they almost double AI performance.
But that's why you buy a Pixel 6a, because now you get all the tensor goodness, right? Or that's why you buy that F4 because, well, you're right. It does have the 870 that doesn't have the latest AI. But I'm thinking, what other, well, a phone with a Dimensity 8100 would have better AI than an 870, yeah?
I don't know the comparison against each other.
I mean, just intuitively, simply because it's a newer chipset, and so it has probably more of the latest AI pipelines. That would be a good, I mean, I'm not like Ars Technica or, you know, a non-tech here. That's not my thing, but somebody needs to write that article. You know, the second highest tier chip from MediaTek, does it beat the 870 in terms of AI performance? Oh, I should pitch that to Dave at Hot Hardware. He'd go all over that. Anyway, so look, Pixel 6a, folks, I say 100%, go for it. Just if you're coming from a 120 hertz display or you want wireless charging, that's the only pause, you know, that I'd have there. But the camera is going to be awesome and performance is going to be awesome. And the battery life seems incredible. And it's Google. Like, you get all the googly stuff, like the, you know, hold for you feature when you're on a call, or the screening of calls, like stuff that I use almost every day on my Pixel. I don't know about you, but
I don't use my Pixel as often as I used to, but it used to be my secondary phone.
Yeah, so you know. My only gripe right now with the Tensor chip in general is, and this is coming from me being a 6 Pro user, is the kind of crappy radio performance, you know? Especially when I'm traveling a lot, I notice the difference in 5G performance versus a Snapdragon like flagship chipset, like an 8 Gen 1 or something, or an 888. And that vexes me a bit. And also, I feel like, I don't know, I'm not sure, like, clearly power management works really well on the 6A. So I feel power management on the 6 Pro, maybe the 6 is a bit better because it doesn't have that massive Quad HD display to drive. But my battery life is good, but not as good as it was 6 months ago. And usually I see more degradation a year and a half into using my phones. So it seems to be happening a little earlier, but I think it might be software related. Like, I think it's some update they did to make the radios a little more sticky in terms of hanging on to signal. And I'm noticing that because of that, the battery life has taken a hit. I don't know, something like that. So can we please get Google, once they exhaust the supply of Tensor chips, to give us a Tensor 2 that has not just the next level of radio from Samsung, but the latest, newest level of radio from Samsung? Because then, like, an ideal scenario would be, okay, let's rewind actually, because I think I've been saying I'd rather have a Snapdragon 8 Gen 1 on my Pixel, but I know that the Tensor stuff is making a lot of those features possible. So here's my question to you. Why didn't Google go to Qualcomm and get them to make a bespoke chip? Is it Qualcomm doesn't want that because they want their brand out there? Because, you know, they did it with Microsoft and that kind of seemed to be a disaster, honestly. Well, why didn't they go to MediaTek and say, make us a Dimensity 9000 bespoke version? I guess they needed millimeter wave. And at the time, they didn't have it. Now they have it with the 1500, the Dimensity 1500. I don't know why they didn't go to Qualcomm and say, Qualcomm, make us a chip. Here's, take our money.
I think it has to do with the fact that part of the reason why they went with Samsung was because it was a relationship that they had with Qualcomm. And I feel like the whole purpose of doing these Tensor chips was to have more control over their destiny. And by simply reconfiguring their relationship with Qualcomm, I'm not sure that they probably felt like that changed much for them.
Right.
But that said, they're still dependent on Samsung. And, you know, they're still able to, you know, dictate certain parts of the SoC, but they're still dependent on Samsung foundries and their roadmap. And they're still dependent on Samsung to build cores. They're still dependent on ARM. So they're really only making a few things that are different than what otherwise would be an off-the-shelf part. So I think you're right. They could have easily done the same thing and gone to MediaTek. But I just think that they wanted to have the whole relationship, which includes Samsung Foundry. And I think that they had the modem at the time. And maybe they give MediaTek a second look. But that said, I believe the Samsung modem is still discrete, and so is MediaTek's modem.
Right. So why not do a hybrid where you go Samsung SoC with a Qualcomm 5G chip? Huh.
I have no clue, but it's possible, or it could be possible. Every time we see Samsung,
it's a discrete solution. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean the thing is that every time Samsung ships an Exynos chip SoC, they usually use an Exynos modem. So there might be a little bit of a a tie together, but.
Yeah, some economies of power management or bus speeds or something there. I don't know. I'm not sure Samsung was the right partner. At the same time, I can see they can leverage that relationships more because Samsung's eager, right? And because Samsung's having a lot of problems with Exynos and also having problems with their foundries.
I mean, honestly,
from everything I've seen of the Snapdragon 8 Plus Gen 1 phones so far that I've used, I haven't run benchmarks, but from everything I've seen, thermals and battery management are better simply because they switched to essentially TSMC process. Like, guys, that is nutso. Like, I did not think that the process could make such a difference, but it is. And I think we're going to look back at 2022, folks, those of us who are nerdy enough to care about this stuff, and say, the 8 Plus Gen 1 was the flagship chip. Whereas in the past, the Plus chips have always been like, it's kind of like a binned chip. It's kind of like the chip you put in a gaming phone or some hardcore, 100%. But this year, I think that we're going to turn around and go like, all the rumors are pointing to the 10T from OnePlus having an 8 Plus Gen 1. And I think we're going to look back at that phone, go, that was the real flagship. Like in terms of performance, battery life, and thermals. Right. Whereas for sure, like in terms of specs, the 10 Pro is the better phone. Right. But just on that, and it's in that sense, there's a very much a parallel with the 6A. I think it's like it's a phone that cuts a few corners, but gets the processing just perfect value.
I think you're totally right about the whole 8 Plus Gen 1 devices being the real flagships, because, it sounded like even Qualcomm was taken by surprise by how much performance they gained, as well as power consumption improvements. So I think the efficiency gain was so huge that they were able to increase performance and save power, which, to your point, looks much better than just a regular process node speed bin.
Yeah. And I think, remember, even when they announced it, showed it to us under embargo back in the day in San Diego, their messaging was a bit weird to me. I'm like, why are you not telling this is just a binned extra slightly faster? Because that's what we were expecting. We're like, it's a Plus chip. We know what to expect. And then they pull this thing out and they go like, yeah, this is actually a different thing. And we're like, huh? And then we ran the benchmarks and we're like, oh boy, this is surprising. And I think that's the exciting thing here. I think personally, TSMC has always been, I think, ahead. And when Qualcomm announced the partnership with Samsung, I was just like, oh, I don't know. Like for me, it was like, I didn't think it was going to be the best solution. And here we are, speaking of which, this is actually a really good segue to talk about the processor in the Phone 1, because nothing seems to have gotten kind of a slightly adjusted, Snapdragon 778 Plus. Now the 778G Plus is a chip that was announced. It exists. It's available to manufacturers. But we haven't really seen any phones with it, have we? Until this one. And this one also, I think, has wireless charging enabled, which I think wasn't part of the 778G Plus spec sheet. So what do you take of this? Do you think that Carl Pei being seen with the Qualcomm folks, Don and stuff, at the at MWC there, that little photo where you see Don McGuire's shoes. Actually, it's Don McGuire's shoes. He told me he was on the show once, and he told me. Like, do you think that that's what they were kind of like making special tweaks for nothing?
I mean, I've seen Qualcomm do this before, where they will, you know, spin a small variation of a chip to satisfy an OEM. You know,
they've done with Xiaomi a lot. Yeah,
exactly. So
remember the 780G?
Exactly what I was going to bring up. So I think that this is probably one of those scenarios where it's very similar to the 780G. And it probably is probably difficult to discern from one to the other, but it might be cheaper. And it might be a chip that maybe Qualcomm isn't selling as much of that they're willing to make compromises on to.
It's also a Samsung manufacturing process, I believe. It's not TSMC, this one.
Yeah, it seems like if you look at the way Qualcomm splits out their process nodes, they'll pick a certain series and just stick to one process node on that series.
Right.
And then maybe they'll have TSMC at the top, and then they'll have Samsung at the bottom. And that's how they were able to balance their foundry orders so that they didn't have any shortages or they were less affected by them compared to everybody else.
Yeah, so to me, the takeaway from the reviews on the Nothing Phone 1, and I don't want to spend as much time on the Nothing Phone 1 because we've really covered it extensively last week, but basically, the reviews are confirming what we thought, right? This is a solid, solid mid-ranger. And if you look, to me, if you look away from all the gimmicks, all the marketing, all the stuff in the back, the transparency, the glyphs, the colors, the LEDs, the flashy lights, you know, you look at it and you're like, okay, this is a mid-ranger that I would want spec-wise. It's like up there with the Nord 2T, right? Or the Nord 2 or you know, even better in some ways than the Poco F4 in the sense that this is an aluminum and glass sandwich, which you don't usually get. One of those two is compromised. Either the frame is plastic or the back is plastic at that price point. And you're getting OIS on the camera. So again, no compromise there. You're getting wireless charging, right? The only imaging kind of compromising they made is using that Samsung JN1 sensor for the ultra wide, which has the smallest pixels to date, right? Like 0.64 micron or whatever it is. And that's the same sensor as in the OnePlus 10 Pro, by the way. So, you know, but the IMX 766 with OIS is kind of appears on a ton of BBK group phones right now with OIS, like even on lower price tiers, which is really amazing. And so we, you know, and this is not a BBK phone, but, you know, the BBK heritage, and I'm sure that the parts supplier for Nothing are very closely related to the parts supplier for BBK, guys, okay? Like, in terms of manufacturing, do we even know who's making the Nothing Phone 1?
Oh, I don't. I was just going to say, what if it's the same CM?
I was going to say it's probably the same factory. Anyway, the point is, it's a solid mid-ranger, good display, 120 hertz, AMOLED. You know, you're getting like wireless charging, OIS, you're getting a decent processor. The only thing on the spec sheet that's lesser than a flagship on this phone is the processor. And apparently, and this is why I brought it up as a transition piece, the processor is also having some trouble with battery life. It's not delivering as good a battery life as you'd expect from the battery capacity that it has. And, you know, again, maybe that's the 778G Plus, you know, if it was made by TSMC, it might be slightly better, who knows. But then on top of that, you get all this kind of extra marketing / gimmicky goodness, which I think is fun. If you want a phone that stands out, something that's different, you get that for free, basically. You know, I'm not sure anybody's going to care too much about the glyphs and the blinking lights on that phone. What's your take? Are you in? Do you think it's going to make a significant difference with your experience?
I think it's one of those things where it enables people to stand out and feel different from everybody else. But ultimately, it doesn't really change the user's experience. But that said, there's a lot of things that don't change the user experience that people still pay for. So
yeah, I mean, I think that for some people who are a little shy and want something a bit more boring, this is not your phone. But if you're looking for, you don't care about the aesthetics of your phone at all, like you don't even care about the blinking lights and you can live with them or even turn them off, and you want a really solid mid-ranger and you're in Europe, dude, this phone right? That's what I'm saying. It's this phone or the Pixel 6a. And I think you're making some, in some ways, you're making more compromises with 6a, you know, overall. Mm-hmm. Like, you might remember how I said, like, the smoothness of the spec sheet in terms of spec balancing is less smooth on the 6a than it is on the Nothing Phone 1, in my opinion. You're getting more of the key hitters on the Nothing Phone 1. The only thing is a little lesser is a processor and the battery life. But then on top of that, if you are a flashy person like you and I, and you want something fancy and fun, like you get this cool little crazy transparent back and the glyphs and the blah, blah, blah. And I got to give Carl some serious props. Like, I knew he was going to give us a good phone. I knew this was going to be in line with the Nord, because the Nord, I feel, was his baby. And I think it was so much his baby that...
And let it go?
Well, yeah, no, but what I'm saying, yeah, you're right. But what I'm saying more, I was getting to is that Pete Lau was like, no, this is too, this is not, we want to be, like, they're looking at longer term business. We want to commodify, right? This is the all OnePlus Oppo merging, and like, they're all just becoming one big kind of boring blob in a way, right? Unless you buy like an Oppo Find X5 Pro and then you, or, you know, you get like the top of the line phones. And I think it wasn't profitable enough, and it was, you know, just a little too Carl Pei. And so that's probably why it didn't work out, and they moved on from each other. And now he's able to do what he really wants to do, you know, and it, and he's still delivering that OnePlus Nord, you know, experience of the spec sheet being so well balanced and the value being so off the charts. And, you know, I think a lot of reviewers are like, yeah, it's a really good mid-range phone. You can't go wrong. But I think people are underestimating the fact that this is more than that. This is an incredible spec sheet for the money. Like, it's aluminum and glass. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't always get, like, I can see if they didn't have wireless charging and didn't have OIS and had aluminum glass, I'd be like, okay, that's what I expect. Or if it did have OIS and it didn't have, it had a plastic frame. But at that price point, you don't get all of those hitting points. You don't get them all. The fact that you do here, like, kind of blows me away and makes me wonder if there is a profit margin for them. What do you think? Do you think they can make money on this?
I think it's probably a challenge in the beginning, as it always is. Usually your first phone is not your most profitable. In fact, it's usually your least. But I would say that I think the importance here was really for them to establish the brand and to land with their first product. And, you know, after that, it becomes much easier. Obviously, it's not an easy thing to do, but I just think that they've established the brand now, and they've got positive reviews, and there's going to be people who own them and will talk about them. And, you know, word of mouth is one of the best ways to sell phones.
100%. My colleague Aryan at Pocket Now bought the phone. He was very gung-ho, and I said, do you want to review it for us? Because I know I wasn't getting one. Jaime got one, and he did our video review, of course, and I couldn't get another phone. So I said to Aryan, yes, absolutely. You bought it. You're obviously into this. Write the review. And, you know, I'll post it in the show notes. And it's, you know, just kind of confirms what everybody else is writing. You know, some people are saying the cameras are okay, but not great. I actually think that from what I'm seeing from the samples, I actually think that maybe all these reviewers are using flagships all day long and not really understand how good those photos are for a mid-range phone. Like, I think for a first try, it's really hard to get the camera tuning as good as they did. And there's room for improvement. And it's just all software, because the hardware components, other than, like I said, the JN1 being a little iffy in pixel size, I think everything's really solid in the imaging. I do wish that more Chinese phone makers, and I count Nothing as a Chinese phone maker, I'm sorry, because you know it's designed and engineered and made there, that they wish that 1080p on the front camera, guys, is got to end. You know, like, Samsung's not doing it. Apple's not doing it. Some select phones are not doing it. And we need 4K on the front camera all the time, every phone, right?
I agree. I mean, my primary is a S22 Ultra. So I've got a big old honking sensor on the front there.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, to me, I think Nothing Phone 1, the reviews confirm everything we talked about last week. It's solid. And I would say that if you're in a market where you have support for 5G on that phone, to strongly consider it if you're looking at a phone around $500. In the same way as the 6A is a solid contender there too. So we got two phones this week that I think put the mid-range back in focus. You know, this is good news. In this economy right now, this is really good news. So that's why I want to spend a huge amount of the podcast talking about these two. And also the choices and the decisions that are being made. Like, you know, going back to the imaging on the Nothing, you've seen the photo samples. Do you agree with me that it's actually probably better than people give it credit for, in the sense that it's their first time doing a phone and that it, you know, delivers something close to, last year's, I would say it's close to last year's flagships, yet it's a mid-range phone.
Yeah, I mean, especially when it's a first phone. That's always, you know, the challenge is just being able to get the software stuff in place to make it look competitive. And for me, I'm pretty lenient because I know how difficult it is to build a phone from the ground up. So I think being able to deliver something that most people agree is fairly good is already a win for them.
Like, I feel like they achieved from launch something that it took, 10 years for OnePlus to achieve? You know, like, it wasn't until really, I think, the OnePlus 9 that we got relatively on par camera performance from OnePlus. Maybe the 8, right?
I feel like the 8 came really close.
But that's how long it took them to get somewhere. And that's for flagships. This is a mid-ranger, and it's already there. Like, wow. Like, I don't know if they just license somebody's imaging pipeline or just use Qualcomm's, but Qualcomm's, in my opinion, is not that great. Like, the Qualcomm Snapdragon 4 fans phone, whatever it's called, you know, the one I'm talking about, that phone doesn't have good camera performance, yet it's using all of Qualcomm's pipeline. Like, I've never felt that Qualcomm's default, if you want to use an imaging pipeline, we've got one off the shelf, has ever been that great.
I'm not sure that it was fully implemented in the device we're talking about.
Yes. Well, there's a lot of things we could talk about on this device. it's an interesting experiment. But I feel like, you know, a lot of manufacturers that use Qualcomm chips sometimes can do better in imaging simply because they don't have anything in-house and they're using the off-the-shelf from Qualcomm. So that tells me that either they're not implementing properly or Qualcomm's not delivering a good enough imaging pipeline as an off-the-shelf thing, right? I have a feeling that's the latter because every, you know, company that has spent time developing their own imaging pipeline, Xiaomi, BBK Group, and Apple and Samsung, obviously, and Google, are delivering finally some solid thing. And here's Nothing, comes along and bang, almost nails it first try. Like, wow, okay, how did that happen, right? Like, just think
maybe,
of that.
Maybe folks. They are using that imaging pipeline.
Well, maybe they licensed it from BBK for all we know.
Or they, I mean, there's also like companies like CyberLink too. So
right, true.
There's a lot of third parties who are also pretty prominent across the smartphone industry.
What if Nothing is really just another BBK experiment?
Conspiracy theory.
I know. Oh man, I just had to throw that out there. Because you remember when OnePlus started, right? Like, no, you know, we're just our own thing. We're like our little startup. Yeah. Once we started digging, it was like, yeah, right. You're not. Okay. Your strings are so attached. And now, obviously, it's very, very obvious. But it's just interesting. I'm super happy about this. I feel that of all the companies that have come along and made a first-time phone, remember Nextbit Robin? Remember Essential? What other players do we have here? Am I missing any major ones?
Not recently.
Right? Nobody's delivered this good from day one. Nobody.
Essential, I think, had a lot more resources and a lot more experience under their belt and was catastrophically worse.
Yes. And then Nothing, I think, did okay, but did pretty much what we expected. It was okay, but not great. Whereas this is, I think, good to great out of the box. So now the question is, can they keep the momentum? Can they deliver on these updates and support that they promise. That's a long tail, right? Like 4 years of software updates. That's hard. Remember how OnePlus did that for a while? Yeah, it's expensive. And more importantly, this, when you start proliferating your portfolio, when they make the phone 2 next year or 2 years from now, whenever, they're going to have to support more stuff. And that's the big question to me is, when we get the phone 2, how many compromises are they going to be? Because they're going to start looking at their cost sheet, right? Like, are they going to cut out the aluminum frame or the UIS or the wireless charging or whatever? Now, I know Carl and I have doubts that they'll break that formula. But how long can they survive as a business if they don't break that formula? You know what I'm saying? Like, think of OnePlus in the early days versus OnePlus now, you know? So
it's not the same. It's not the same formula.
So
anymore.
Don't get too warm and fuzzy and attached yet. Okay. Just enjoy the phone for what it is.
Keep your distance.
Keep your distance. Stay in your lane. All right. Okay. Let's talk about news now. We've kind of covered all the important stuff for the reviews, but look, I think it's been an interesting week because there's a bunch of stuff that's kind of like we knew was coming. So, of course, the big news this week, if you're in the US at least, because Samsung, Apple, duopoly, is the Galaxy Unpacked event scheduled for August 10th. So prepare to be bombarded with $5 billion of marketing or something. So, as an aside, also, there's an article on TechCrunch here that says that people prefer flip-style folding phones. According to Samsung, 70% of people that they surveyed prefer the flip phones, like the flipped over the fold. I completely get that. I, as much as I love the fold, and I can never feel that I have a use case for it. The Oppo Find N to me was the only like book style folding phone that worked because it wasn't too big when it was open. Yeah, I know you know, there is Microsoft. Anshel was just showing the Surface Duo, but I feel like the flip style is the one people want. Like Theo went nuts over the Z Flip 3 last year to the point where I bought them one and they're using it as their second phone in Canada right now. And this is a hardcore Apple user switching to Android. Well, they still have the iPhone, of course. But like that's how you never see that, okay? And then honestly, the next question related to the Unpacked is, they can only be really evolutionary this year with the Flip. Like last year was the big step, right? Lower price, water resistance, better form factor, better build, better reliability. Everything was better, right? I don't see them doing this again for another year. Like at this point, this is going to basically be, we stick an 8 plus Gen 1 or an 8 Gen 1 in there and we make the colors better and we improve the cameras a little bit and maybe the battery life a little bit. And that's it. That's your phone, right? Like, is that a bad thing? No, but don't get your hopes high on anything else. Do you feel the same way?
Yeah, I pretty much agree across the board. I think they're mostly going to be delivering, like, maybe the outside screen will get a little bit bigger and better because they've done that generationally. And the cameras will probably get better like they did generationally. And they'll probably make the screen more durable as they've done with every generation. And they'll probably iterate on the hinge again. So it's very iterative. But I think this year will probably be less, you know, revolutionary. I think you're right. Maybe they might change the design language a little bit. Maybe make it a little bit smoother, which they kind of did last gen as well. Because remember, it used to be really square and it kind of like smoothed off a little bit. Maybe they'll make the screen slightly larger. That would be interesting. But I think you're right. And this whole article, I just think that when I've presented people flip and fold, a lot of people prefer the flip over the fold. I personally am a foldy boy, but that's because I like having that big screen and being able to dual screen stuff. But I also would like the fold to be a little bit wider than it is currently. And I'm actually not in the camp of the Find N, in the sense that one, I don't have one, but also I've played with it enough that like I don't like that form factor as much because I don't feel like I'm gaining enough screen space compared to if I had like some other foldables.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. Like I think that it really is a personal preference. And I feel like for me, the Find N was the first non-flippy, but foldy phone that I was like, I don't have to adjust my use cases. That's the biggest thing for me. And I think that's why I think the Flip is more successful, is because people can picture themselves using this, because it's like, okay, what's in my pocket? It's folded, it's protected, it's smaller, it's more convenient. I pull it out and I can see my notifications. And then when I want to get productive, I open it up and I get exactly the same experience I'd get on S22, right? And that, I think, is why it flies. Now, the end for me was similarly like that, in the sense that it gave me that 7-inch plus real estate, but it was still a phone experience. I didn't have to worry about adjusting windows and multitasking and getting all hardcore like you would, or like Michael Fisher, Mr. Mobile would, because you guys are even more power users than I am. I'm just lazy. I just like, for me, multitasking is just basically a stack of cards and I bring one app to the forefront. Windowing, I'm not in for windowing yet.
I'm currently speaking to you with a 49-inch, a 40-inch, and a 34-inch, all ultra-wide.
I know. Your desk setup is insane. I've seen photos. Yeah. So, you know, I think it's a preference thing. But I am totally not surprised by these numbers. And I just want to kind of say that, yes, if you're going to see a lot of hype around these folding and flippy phones from Samsung, but I think it's going to be very evolutionary, and that's totally okay. So if you have a Z Flip 3 right now, wait till next year, because I don't think this is going to matter at all for you. If you have a Z Fold, maybe, because you're more of an early adopter, you might want to update. If there's a significant improvement, maybe the under-display camera is significantly improved. Or
I hope so. Know,
yeah. And maybe the 8 Plus Gen 1 brings huge battery life improvements to the table. We don't know, right? And I assume that's what we're going to see on these phones. But speaking of other launches, which I think are going to be less hyped, but I think are just as important, we talked about the OnePlus 10T, which is launching August 3. We don't know much about it other than it's not, you know, it's a flagship, but it's not like a pro model, right? So the spec sheet should be lesser than the 10 Pro, except we all think, right? I mean, come on, they can't launch this thing with an 8 Gen 1. It's got to be 8 Plus Gen 1, right? I mean,
I feel like it. The T has always been the one where they've gone with the faster chip if they could.
Exactly. So I'm actually excited that we get to see this phone. Like, we didn't get a T last year in the US, and we got the 9, which I think was a miss because no OIS, plastic frame. It was basically the carrier phone. They made a phone for the carriers in the US, which, as you know, the carriers in the US are misguided. And sorry, that's a polite way of putting it. And so we got the Shaft. And anybody who bought that phone, I feel really bad for you, because the Nord is a better phone. And of course, the Nord doesn't work in the US. So, you know. But speaking of BBK Group goodness, dude, I have this phone right now. The Realme GT2 Explorer Master Edition, it just looks as awesome as in these pictures. Like, it is like the design. What I love about Realme is they take a slab phone, which is boring AF, and they make it look, without like expensive flip or, you know, extra displays or hardware, they make it look super cool, you know?
I'm surprised that they're able to get that chip in there with that price point.
Well, yeah, it's an 8 Plus Gen 1, yeah?
Yeah.
And on top of that, it's the first phone in the world with LPDDR5X RAM.
Which is, again, all about the performance story, right? It's really about just getting you the fastest processor and the fastest memory.
And here are the prices, folks. This is the craziness. All right? You can get $518 in Indian currency equivalent for the entry level 8 gig, 128 gig. This thing has OIS on a IMX766, which is very on brand for a BBK Group phone right now, and it's a solid camera system. It's like I think the IMX766 is the new IMX586, you know. It's like on everything, and it's a good sensor. It's solid, you know. But this phone, the specs, wow. And the hardware, it looks so great. I have the one that, you know, has that kind of like cream color with the brown. It's actually an anodized brown aluminum.
I didn't realize that.
Like, it's not cheap. Like, they are not cheaping out on this thing. It's insane.
I think they're probably able to get enough volume. I can't imagine anything else being the way they would have been that viable.
You know, so let's see, what do we have here? So I said IMX766, We've got a 50 megapixel ultra wide, probably the JN1. Yeah, there's a microscope. There's a 60 megapixel front camera. It's got, what's the chart? 5,000 milliamp hour battery. No, actually, I'm reading the wrong one. So it's got a full HD 120 Hertz display, AMOLED, of course. And trying to see what the actual specs are in terms of charging speeds. Do you see that anywhere in there?
Didn't I just close that tab?
It's okay. I think it's like, it's not like 150 watt, like their GT3 Neo. But it's I think like 100 watt or 80 watt or something. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty amazing. No wireless charging on this because it's Realme. I feel like Realme is the new OnePlus. Do you feel the same way?
At this point, in terms of what OnePlus was originally intended to do, yeah.
It's kind of what it is. Yeah, so that's a good one. It's finally out. We knew it was coming because they'd leaked the design and we were all kind of like, whoa, this is cool. And then they sent me one and now it's official. So expect a video on my YouTube. Expect me to cover it in more depth in the future. Similarly, another BBK group phone that's out there now is, it's now available globally. We talked about it a few weeks ago when it was announced in China, is the Reno 8 series. And the top dog of the Reno 8 series is a Dimensity 8100 phone. So it looks more like Oppo Find-ish, right? It's just kind of cool.
I think, I guess it depends which Find, right?
Well, I'm talking about the Find X5 and Find X3 Pro. It's got that camera bump that melds into the body is what I'm saying. And this is genuinely melding. It's actually, I think it's glass on this. So they're actually doing the sculpted thing.
I really like the look on the Find X5 Pro.
Yeah, so
this
me too,
is kind of this is kind of like an extension of that, and I a little bit, I would say a little bit more of like a harsh way, maybe a little bit less smooth. So yeah. I think that bump was very like silky smooth in how it was implemented.
Yeah, this is definitely more abrupt for sure. So you know what's interesting to me is the Reno series kind of started off as a premium mid-range metal and glass top specs. Remember they did a periscope zoom and everything. And then it kind of slowly descended into the oppification, plastic everywhere. And more importantly, it looked cool, but it just kind of felt cheap for a little while. And then with the 6, they started going back to more premium build and design. And then the 7 really nailed it, slab-sided, very iPhone-like. Better features, better materials. And then the 8 is continuing that. And I think that's kind of why I'm excited about these phones, because they're a true mid-ranger or premium mid-ranger from Oppo. And what stands out to me is not only that they use Dimensity 8100, they're using their own ISP here. You know, the Mary Silicon X chip from the Oppo Find X5 Pro is in that phone.
I did not realize that.
Yeah, it's the first Dimensity phone with that chip, because I thought it was
after the isn't the X5 Pro also have it?
Yeah, but the Dimensity version doesn't have it.
Really?
Yeah, so this is the thing you have to understand. This doesn't apply to anyone who's listening because it's a China only thing. I have both here. I actually did some consulting about this. Basically, I figured out that there's a bunch of things that are much worse on the Dimensity 9000 version of the Oppo Find X5 Pro. The processor isn't worse. I mean, it's a really solid processor, but they removed the Mary Silicon X and they removed the in-body stabilization as well. So it doesn't have the same camera system. It has the same sensors, but the optics are slightly different and the OIS system on the main camera is very different because, as you know, the Find X5 Pro combines in-body stabilization and lens stabilization. So it's a hybrid between, the lens moving and the sensor moving. Whereas the Dimensity version of the Find X5 Pro is purely the lens moving, this traditional OIS.
That's super confusing because
and
I totally
no Hasselblad branding and no Hasselblad features.
Right. I mean, I could see that being like a cost cutting move. I mean, everything you described sounds like a cost cutting move. Sounds like they were trying to hit a different price point.
Yeah, and it is definitely cheaper in China. But I also was surprised that the Mary Silicon X wasn't in there. Like, I thought for sure, and I thought the hardware was parity other than the processor, but there's other things that they changed, is what I'm saying.
That's really interesting because I had the same assumption you did. I do not have that phone. And it sounds like I probably don't want it, but I really thought that the whole purpose of doing Mary Silicon X was so that they could choose between processors and still retain the same camera's software features because they have that coprocessor that they can rely on. And that completely blew up my entire theory.
But when I first noticed that it didn't have the Mary Silicon X, because I was like you, it was so hard to find information about it. But when I got the phone, I started digging, I was like, doesn't have it. And I was like, maybe it's requiring a Qualcomm chip. Maybe the way it interfaces with the SoC or the memory system, right, is requiring a Qualcomm chip. But clearly not, because this has it. So that's good. That's good news. But yeah, I think it just shows you how Oppo made a Find X5 Pro that was a cost saving version for China, which is kind of crazy, right?
Definitely.
Yeah. So there you go. Mary Silicon X on a mid-ranger. So that tells us a lot, you know, which I think is very, very interesting.
And I was going to say, you know, I was completely blown away by the Find X5 Pro's low light video performance.
Oh, it's incredible. The video is unreal.
I heard good things, but, you know, seeing is believing. And I went to the county fair a few weeks ago and took it to one of those spinny chair things where, you know, everyone's hanging by a chain and they're spinning around.
Oh, yeah.
And the quality, like the frame rate and like just the image quality was unbelievable. Like, no, there is no other way to view how good it is except for looking at it on the screen, because nothing can reproduce how good that looks. And it really made me believe that, like, it's the best phone for video, at least in my opinion.
And honestly, it's the first time I've ever used an Android phone where I was like, I can do low light video. You're right. It's like an iPhone. There wasn't a single drop frame in there. Unbelievable.
Buttery smooth.
And it's sad that we're saying that. It's really sad that we're saying that, that even Samsung can pull off giving us video without drop frames. Anyway, so that's basically what we got on the roster for the week. A lot of BBK Group news between the OnePlus, the Realme, and the Oppo there at the end. And then all the Samsung stuff. And of course, Google and nothing kind of upping the mid-range game. I just feel like it's been a good week. I'm excited about this week somehow. Like, I'm bummed that I don't have those two phones that are kind of, you know, changing the game in a way. But it's coming, folks. I'll get them eventually, yeah. I've been massaging my PR contacts. If you're listening, Folds, please, you know, thank you. But are you going to get these, you think? What's your
maybe
plan on
the
those?
I'll probably get the 6A.
Yeah.
I just have to like message my contacts at Google because they've given them to me before. Usually they give me the flagships because that's usually what they focus on with analysts. But I'm actually excited to play with the Red Magic 7S Pro because that active cooling is probably going to be the best performing Snapdragon 8 Plus Gen 1 chip on a phone just because it has active cooling. And in previous generations of testing the Red Magic phones, specifically their Pro version, it's been the one that retains performance most consistently while
100%.
Gaming.
Even with the fan turned off on the Red Magic 7 that reviewed for Hot Hardware a few months ago, I was getting 95 to 97% stability on the 20-minute tests, which is unreal for a passive cooling solution. And then if you turn on the active cooling, it was 99.9% stability for 20 minutes. And what I like about the Pro phones, which is my first time playing with, I had the 7 Pro for a bit, but I have the 7S Pro now, is that they're more compact because the bezels are even and you have no speakers on the front. They're on the sides. And the under-display camera means that you get an uninterrupted, essentially, screen in your hands. And, you know, gaming phones are generally big and heavy. And this thing is big and heavy, but not as big and heavy as the non-Pro version, which I think is nice. And speaking of even bezels, I know we're in the weeds right now a bit, but that's the thing that blew me away the most about the Phone 1, is that you know how much it costs to get a display with completely even bezels on an Android phone? Like, Apple does it, but they plan for it, and their supply chain is insane, so they can justify the cost. But the fact that the Nothing Phone 1 is so affordable and has an incredibly equal bezel all the way around, which is, I believe, very few Android phones do. You have to go to super high-end, or, like, I think Google did it once with the 5. Like, it's kind of amazing, you know?
It's an aesthetic thing.
It's the details. I love the attention to detail, and that's what CarPay is really good at. On that note, I just want to say I've been kind of testing the 5G broadband from T-Mobile, and this entire show was done over a 5G router from T-Mobile that's powering my entire house in San Francisco right now, and I'm getting not incredible numbers, but I'm getting about 150 to 200 megabits down and 50 to 70 megabits up consistently with absolutely no drops, no latency issues, no problems. This is a second generation product. And I have to tell you that if you have good signal on that thing, you should have a really good experience. It's exceeding my expectations. So there you go.
This is the MediaTek based one.
I have no idea.
Does it look like a square or like a trash can?
It looks like a square, not a trash can.
Yeah, that's the MediaTek one. The first one was a Qualcomm Nokia, and the second one is like a MediaTek. I forget the name of the ODM, but yeah, it's a complete top to bottom MediaTek solution.
This thing, basically, I plugged it into my network from the Ethernet port, and I have been very, very impressed. Now, you're not going to get gigabit speeds out of this, but I'm at 4 out of 5 bars. So there's headroom here. If I could get 5 bars, I bet you my download speed could be better. But for me, the biggest limitations, I can't get fiber here. I can only get DOCSIS 3.1, and I can get fantastic download speeds, but my upload speeds are capped at about 20 max on cable right now. So this is giving me 60, 50, 70. It's a doubling of my upload speed. So that's pretty exciting.
I feel bad for you. I hope I don't have to move to a place where I won't have access to fiber, but I completely sympathize with you in previous places where I lived.
My place in Vancouver has 1 gig symmetric for $65 a month. And that's Canadian dollars, so you do the math. So this is, you know, it's funny because a block away from me, I can get fiber here in San Francisco. It's literally like I'm right at the edge of what they built out, and no provider is going to give it to me. I've got the choice between the evil cable companies and, do I want AT&T DSL? Okay. Yeah. So now I've got T-Mobile here kicking ass, okay? I just want to say, this is not a sponsored piece, guys, but, I am blown away by this. This is so good. I did not expect it to be this good.
And it's been stable for over an hour.
It's been stable for days now. I am in Slack and in Zoom calls and in Google Meets all day long with my team at Pocket now. So, good way to test it. Anshul, do you want to tell folks where they can find you on the internet?
Yeah, I'm pretty much everywhere all at once at Anshul Sog, whether it's Instagram or Twitter or Facebook or LinkedIn. I'm pretty easy to find, and I'm very prolific on Twitter.
And you are an analyst, right?
Yes. So my day job, I am a analyst for More Insights and Strategy, and I cover the smartphone space, but I also cover technologies like 4G, 5G, and Wi-Fi. I cover lots of semiconductors. I cover XR extensively. And it's been a lot of fun in the last couple of years with everything kind of blowing up all at once.
For sure. Folks, check out Anshul on social and also on Forbes. You write from time to time. And you know where to find me. I'm at Tank Girl everywhere. TNKGRL. Think Tank Girl, the comic book. Drop all the vowels. That's how my Twitter handle looks. That's how my Instagram handle looks. So if you want to chat about this podcast with me and Anshul, look for us on Twitter. And let us know what you think. And if you want to see pretty pictures of phones and pretty pictures, of cars and other tech taken with phones, because I do everything with phones, check out my Instagram. There is the podcast, of course, mobiletechpodcast.com. There's an RSS feed there if you're old school, but we're on all the platforms, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Spotify, everywhere good podcasts can be found. If your app lets you rate or review the show, please consider doing that. If you want some more visuals, you have a couple of YouTube channels to pick from, youtube.com/mobiletechpodcast and youtube.com/mobiletechmore. You know how YouTube works. Like, subscribe, tell your friends, click the little notification bell and comment. Comment about the podcast if you'd like. Most of my channels contain unboxing videos and other bits and pieces of visuals. The More channel is more geared towards peripheral stuff like travel tech, home automation, car tech, whereas the main channel is more like the phones and personal audio and wearables and stuff like that. Also, there is a Patreon. If you want to help this podcast, you know, you can see a video version of the podcast. I publish it every week. It comes out a couple of days before the public audio version, and you get to see Anshel and me and our faces and us brandishing phones, although I didn't brandish any phones on this show. But sometimes I do, and that's kind of the surprise. But look, there's a tier there that gives you a video version. There's a tier there that gives you access to the Discord server. And I think you should check all that out and see if you can support me. I would appreciate it. And, you know, if you don't want to use Patreon, I totally understand. That's cool. There's a PayPal link in the show notes. Just donate $5. I can buy a coffee, buy myself lunch. Well, not with $5, but coffee. And yeah, consider helping out. I would appreciate it. And finally, of course, you know, we have Audible. Audible's been sponsoring us for years now. They're fantastic. You know, we love them. So you can help out by clicking through this link, audibletrial.com/mobiletech. That's audibletrial.com/mobiletech. You get a 30-day free trial and you get to keep a book at the end, whether you stay or not. I think you'll stay because if you're like me and you love books, it's kind of a no-brainer. It's like books being read to you. You know, you're like me, you're probably in front of a computer all day, your eyes are tired, you don't really want to read a book at the end of the day. So you just sit down and relax and put your headphones or earbuds on and just listen to a book. It's fantastic. And it takes multiple days. It's like the book experience. You put it down for a while, come back to it. And then they have some short content too, if you want something a little less intense. They have some podcasts. They have all kinds of really good content. I love that a lot of their books are read by the authors, and if you're into that, you know, there's just so much good stuff there. Audible is kind of a must-have. If you don't have it and you want to help, consider clicking through audibletrial.com/mobiletech. And I want to thank Audible again for being our longtime sponsor. And of course, I want to thank you, Anshel, for being on the show yet again for the nth time, debating the finer things of chip manufacturing processes with me. Thank you.
Thanks for having me. It's always fun, and I'd be happy to come back on again.
We'll definitely have you on again, Anshel. And folks, you know we'll have another show next week, so stay tuned for that. And until then, cheers, everybody.
This has been the Mobile Tech Podcast with Tank Girl, proudly presented by worldpodcasts.com. You can visit us online at mobiletechpodcast.com.